Welcome to the Sounds of Success, brought to you by the National Association of Professional Martial Artists. This audio magazine is a tool for generating profitable ideas and for taking your business to new levels of excellence and performance. Here you'll find real-life case studies of school owners just like you who have applied our proven successful business and marketing principles to their school and are creating the business of their dreams as a result.
Welcome to our call today. This is Stephen Oliver, CEO of the National Association of Professional Martial Artists, and I am honored to have Chief Master Bill Clark with me today. Master Clark, welcome to our call.
Thank you, sir. Good to be here.
We were just trying to figure out, I think we have known each other, or at least I have known you, Master Clark. I'm not sure you remember me from as far back as 1975 or 1976, And we met through my instructor, Jeff Smith, and one of the things that Master Clark has always been impressed me since long before you knew who I was is how open and sharing you've always been, but also how aggressive you've been in looking for best practices and best case and learning from anybody who was highly successful. So I want to give you kudos on that ahead of time here as we get started in our conversation.
Thank you, sir. Great to hear from somebody who's as accomplished as you are, so I appreciate that.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Hey, one of the things that that I wanted to spend some time on today with you, and probably many of our listeners have heard you speak from time to time, but one of the things I tell people often is one of the first times I actually visited your schools there in Jacksonville was the time that I convinced my friends Tim Kovar and Steve LaValle to come visit you, and you know, the thing that I spent the most time with personally, taking notes and doing observation and wishing I had had the video camera, was really in the quality, the depth, and the substance of your instructor training. And I know a lot of people think of you as kind of a business guy, and you're always talking about renewals or pricing or marketing. But I was just so impressed with the depth of preparation, of quality of instructor training, and ultimately the quality of the floor that you were able to maintain across a huge organization. So I thought maybe we could talk about that a little bit today and talk both about creating the quality of classroom environment that you've put together in your schools and I know a huge impact across the entire ATA organization, as well as the methodology that any individual instructor should be looking at to develop at that level.
Sure. I mean, obviously the ATA has a fantastic instructor program, and without that, you can't grow to the size we are. And our whole growth is not based on our business principles, but on our instructor program. And I believe we're probably the largest organization in America. It's really an organization, not just have a patch for competition, but really have an organization that trained together, and it's because of our instructor program. And it is always under development, and I've been instrumental in it. But, you know, we started long before I even joined the ATA. They had an instructor program in order to grow. So I think if that's your intent, you've got to have one.
I was talking, I forget who it was, today or yesterday. And one of the things that's most striking from an outsider, from a friend, but an outsider's perspective is, ATA has such a phenomenally tight culture and a phenomenal level of, and it may not feel that way internally, but from an outsider's perspective, a very, very positive culture of nice people, family-oriented, with really high-quality focus on martial arts technique, but more importantly on developing human beings. And it'd be interesting to get your observation on how that developed over the years.
Well, I wish I could take credit for that, but that was probably mostly from Grandmaster H.U. Lee, because his whole thing was the ATA's got to be a martial art that develops people mentally, physically, and spiritually. And spiritually, he meant through the energy of the whole contact between people. And I think he really laid the foundation for that. And like you said, we have a great group of people. And we seldom lose anybody. When we do, it's usually because they think they can make more money somewhere else. But I've never met anybody who left that wasn't at some point sad because they weren't part of the family that they really grew up in. So, you know, so there's only been a few that leave because we are, like I said, huge, and it is one big family caused by H.U. Lee and the way he treated people.
You know, and you mentioned something that's kind of off topic, but something that I somehow learned in high school, maybe it was watching Junery and Jeff Smith, but is you never burn bridges. It's so important, especially in an industry and profession as small as ours is so many times in the heat of the moment, people make rash decisions. And I rarely see somebody who blows up a bridge or leaves an association out of anger or out of some perceived fault in the short term, who many years later haven't regretted that. It's one of the things I think I did well over the years is maintaining the relationship with Junery and Jeff Smith and Nick Okinas and so forth, where so many other people had burned that bridge. I know you think that's extremely important.
Well, I know it is for us because, I mean, it's amazing to me how many people will leave their instructor, open up across the street, and then be amazed when their juniors do exactly the same thing. That's what I love the payback that comes around through life. So it's always, I've even had people call me, you know what he did? I said, well, that's the same thing you did. So, I mean, I don't know why people are so surprised by that. But, you know, you got to have a certain level of integrity, and the APA does through and through. And really a martial arts organization about people that train together, not just people that go to tournaments or not just people that make a living, but people that train together. And the best way to build a bond with people is to train with them. And that's what we do.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I've got to tell you, you know, kudos to you and your organization. It's just been a fabulous role model for so many others. And I know that through the industry many times that anybody who's successful gets a lot of slings and arrows and criticisms, and certainly you and I have shared that. But most of those who are criticizing are either jealous or they really don't know the inside scoop on what it really looks like. And so I know from firsthand observation the level of quality and focus on instructor development and training that you guys have put in. So it's phenomenal. But let's talk about that. What are some of the primary tenets as developing a new instructor and creating the structure for them to follow that you would say are most important?
I think, well, I mean, that's, first off, I have a complete program that's 12 months in length. It starts every January and goes for 12 months, and it starts again. It rotates the next year. So I have a complete program that's taught right out of like a college book. It's something that's repeated. I don't make it up. Nobody changes it. And I also have a 90-day program that I use when it's an emergency, and both of them are 300-hour programs. Then I have ongoing training for all instructors. Those three things, I think, keep us together and training together. I think I'm your instructor today, and even after I become, I guess, your boss, I'm mainly going to still be your instructor. I think a lot of people make that mistake is they're someone's student, they hire them, and now they expect them to just be an employee. And I don't look at any of my associates like that at all. They are my juniors, and it's my job to help them grow and to help them be successful in the martial arts. And I don't look at any of them as employees. I think maybe that helps the ATA, too, because I remain their instructor. And I think also having the hierarchy the ATA has allows everybody from the highest ninth-degree black belt down to a beginning white belt to know right where they fit in the picture. And I think that makes it comfortable. Everybody knows where they belong, where they are, how they're moving up. I think having that clear track record from a curriculum from white belt to ninth-degree black belt and a curriculum along the way, every step of the way, that's a clear path that anybody can follow. It's not brain surgery. It's just a path. Like you start out going from Jacksonville to Miami, I know you get on 95, and it's a clear path straight down. That's how clear it is in the ATA.
Yeah. And, you know, something you said is high-performing organizations, and, of course, you know I suffer from a master's in business, but the research shows high-performing organizations have the same thing. They have a mentorship role. It's one of the things that Jack Welch was known for, one of the things that Apple is known for. There was a recent study that showed that West Point and the United States Air Force Academy are two of the top 10 results in universities in the country. West Point has more CEOs than Harvard does because they focus on that mentorship, teaching, leadership, development role. And the top-performing companies, I pay a lot of attention to, for instance, Apple. And that's the deal with Apple is Steve Jobs personally is mentoring, or he was until he took medical leave, all of their vice presidents and they have a system in place for them to make incremental growth. So it's so important, but of course most of the world is driven by mediocrity, not by excellence. And the excellence that you have developed is models the best best practices anywhere in the world. So
Marshall, we just follow a martial arts model. The instructors move up, and then the masters help their juniors, and everybody. I mean, everybody. It's kind of like you know Jeff Smith was your instructor, and he knows June Ree was his instructor, and everybody just kind of follows. And if everybody does their part, martial arts is a great place to be.
Absolutely, absolutely. And unfortunately, you know, all areas of life, but martial arts as well, does have a lot of people who think that they've outgrown their teacher or mentor, or for one reason or another, you know, pull themselves out of that hierarchy, and I think in almost all cases are poor for it, as we talked about before. Let's talk about your ongoing instructor training. What are the key elements that your full-time instructors and their juniors are training on?
Now, you're talking about the people in my 12-month rotating curriculum to become an instructor, or after they're already an instructor?
Let's talk about the ones that are already an instructor, and you know that's one of the things that I personally witnessed is your full-time instructors and the training that you were running them through. What's their ongoing training look like? What are the key elements you're developing with them?
Well, first off, every Monday and every Wednesday, we come together to train, but we train in marketing. We go over the teaching plan for the week. We go over sales, and we go over the administration. And we handle everything every Monday with a bigger emphasis on Wednesday on teaching and following the plan and the marketing and what they're going to do for the week on Monday. And when I had one school, I still had a meeting every Monday and every Wednesday. And that was way back in 1971 when I first started. And I would do my role-playing with our 11-page script. I would practice the teaching because we had a teaching Bible even then. And one thing I know the ATA does, or at least I do in my schools very much, is we actually practice teaching. And we don't practice on students. We practice on each other. And we monitor and adjust when you're teaching. Okay, this, I'd like you to see, do this different or do this different. So I think that gives us a real, I don't know any other martial arts instructors who practice. They just go on the floor and teach. That's not what we do at all.
Yeah, I described Tim Cove, our Steel Valley, and I watching your staff training, and the thing I was taking notes on most voraciously was you were coaching the instructors on how to, during the classroom, interact with the parents, what the script was for interacting with the parents in different situations, the timing and pacing of that during the classroom involvement, the involving the parents in the discipline of the class and bowing in and bowing out with the class and so forth. It was just so incredibly impressive. And again, it's very rare. I know with the Junior Institute, we did a fair amount of that. And you know, my rule of thumb for many years with the schools here in Denver was same thing. Every Monday and Wednesday we met and trained. But you know, I will say I was very good at teaching the script on sales and marketing, and lax compared to you on really that script on each step of the teaching process and the student parent interaction.
Well, what I did was actually just, I mean, there are a lot of great instructors that I've watched over the years, and they do a lot of things naturally. The problem is that you can't pass that on to your juniors, so I went out and wrote down everything that I think should happen, like under rapport building, how to involve the parents. That's what you, and then we practice that and make it natural for everybody who is not natural. I mean, because everybody will hit one or two things. They won't hit them all unless, in fact, we're going into a strong round of role-playing on the floor next Monday. It's right at the time of year. We just finished 6 months, and we're starting again. And even though some of my guys have been with me 30 years, they're going to have to go through the same thing with a brand-new instructor because I'm a reminder of this is what we do. We build rapport. We use their name. We look them in the eye. We touch their shoulder, their hand, or their foot. We shake the parents' hands. We have the parents judge. Ask permission to break boards. We bow into the parents. The parents read the lesson of the month. We have a lot of rapport-building things every instructor has to be trained on over and over, or they'll forget them. So, I mean, I think that most people train on the sales. Everybody knows me for that because That's what they asked me to do. But what I really am is a decent martial arts instructor that knows how to create other instructors. But just no one's ever asked me to teach that at a seminar anywhere.
Well, we're going to fix that, but I got to tell you, it's extremely impressive. You touched on it already a little bit, but what are the key components of the instructor training that you're hitting throughout the training cycle? So, obviously, one of them is student rapport building, parent rapport building, classroom structure and format. What are those key elements?
Well, the most important one that we think is structure. Because if it doesn't look like a military unit, no one really knows what to do. So our classes look very much like that movie End of the Dragon, where everybody moves on command, everybody goes back, everybody knows their place. So structure, we have 10 points of structure. I don't have them in front of me, but we know what we want in our class. And my Krav class has 10 points of structure, different than my Taekwondo class. So whatever I'm teaching will have a structure, how I would like this class to look. Then we have the instructor points. This is my information that the ATA now has adapted, so I don't mind giving up to you. And the instructor points are what the instructor does and says in the class. Then you have rapport building, which you've already looked at. And then, of course, you know what we teach are the structure, of course, is what I want the students to do, where they stand in the room, where they line up on their dots. They line up by height. They face each other, one and two. If there's a line drill, they face the back of the room. All the things that you want a class to look like. The last thing, of course, is what we actually teach is speed, power, balance. We don't really teach a martial arts form. We teach these attributes with martial arts. So we concentrate on the attributes, although we might be teaching our first form, Song Om 1. We may be using Song Om 1 to teach speed and power today. So we concentrate on teaching the attributes, and that's the 4 points that we use. Now we have another one that comes from the ATA that's about monitoring and adjusting the class. But those are the 4 that I kind of come up with that I use and that I follow and I grade all my instructors on. Sometimes they'll be real good on structure, but they won't build rapport. And so I have a little chart and I mark down every time they do something with structure, I make a little check mark. Every time they build rapport, use somebody's name, look at somebody's eyes, smile, or use proper touch, I'll give them a check. But by the end of the thing, I expect 25 checks in each of these 4 areas. And if I get those 25 checks, that's a balanced class. And if any area is left out, I know it'll affect me, both on student retention and also on people upgrading and people being comfortable and people constantly making progress. But if I don't teach these attributes, if I don't teach that, I know people won't make progress and they'll drop out. So that's what I concentrate on. And I constantly teach that and we'll work on it. And I might tell the instructors, okay, today I'm looking at instructor points. And so they'll be doing them, but the whole time I'm really grading them on rapport building. And I'll say, you know, you've got to do it all the time. And so, I mean, this is science. And once you do it, because everybody's doing something already. Everybody has a certain structure to their class. It just may not be working. Everybody's teaching something. They just may not be concentrating on attributes. Everybody has instructor points or what the instructor does. It just may not help them create the next instructor or they didn't write it down. So I think these are the things that made it different for us is we actually wrote it down and we constantly train on it, including myself, after 40 years of doing it.
Yeah, very, very important.
If that made sense or that was too convoluted, or but it's
I think it makes a lot of sense. I mean, I'm going to walk you back so that we can expand on each point a little bit if you don't mind. But let me go back to something you said, even a tick or two earlier than those 4 points, and make sure nobody missed it. You know, I used to joke that if you train staff on Friday, they need to be retrained on their job on Monday, and the old June Ree Nick Coquinas version was every 13 weeks the training cycle started over, so 4 times a year you trained everybody on anything. One of the quotes that I've come to like over the years is Stephen Hawking, the physicist, and his is all systems left to themselves tend towards entropy. In other words, anything ignored tends to fall apart. And what you said there I think is so important for nobody to miss. Is there's no such thing as a trained instructor there's constant training. Any more than there's such a thing as having mastered sidekick and never having to do it again to maintain that mastery, is we constantly go back through and train on all the things we've already been trained on repetitiously in order to keep maintaining that same level of mastery, or else you start to lose it. And you hit upon that, but I wanted to reemphasize that for everybody is, you know, in your case or my case, the things that we're working on staff training and development, on motivation, on whether it be marketing, sales, or educational development, we're retraining ourselves, because we forget things that we used to know. And with our staff, we've got to retrain them on a pretty regular cycle, or else they forget what we trained them on.
Sure. I mean, these things are all repeatable skills. Go ahead.
No, I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead, sir.
I was just going to say, these are all repeatable skills. If somebody reminds you, our previous grandmaster was Grandmaster Sun Ho Lee, and he told me, he said, you know, there's always more to learn. That became his kind of his trademark. Then he said to me, but it's usually stuff you already know. So I think
yeah.
He was kind of right on. It's kind of like there's always more to learn, but you probably already know it. You just got to relearn it. I think he's pretty much right on, because I have a seminar coming up in January of 2012, in January, on how to teach. And I got so many people getting ready to sign up already, been calling me about it from the ATA, and some from outside the ATA, because they say, well, no one really teaches us how to teach. And I'm thinking to myself, what are you talking about? That's all I do is teach how to teach. But it's amazing. This is a missing element, I think, in the martial arts industry. And everybody teaches curriculum or technique, how to fight or how to do self-defense. Very few actually have skill sets written down for how to teach.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and it's also why it's very rare for a single school operator who's doing well to be able to branch into 3, 6, 9, 12, in your case, you know, 28 locations, because the key element was the dynamic, charismatic instructor on the floor. And if they don't have a training process to replicate that and not have it be serendipity or you know, just stumbling across a charismatic person, then they can't replicate that. And that's why so many times when it's multiple unit operations, people get a bad reputation, because it's putting poor instructors without instructor training in, rather than the type of thing that you've developed and that ATA has developed. So let me walk you back through some of those points to maybe expand a little bit. And I really like you use the Enter the Dragon analogy, because I've always told everybody that, is that the average parent walks in and they expect the class to be, you know, operating in unison and look like that opening scene on the island with everybody moving in sequence. And if you have, you know, what looks like chaos, even if you know what's going on and it's, you know, organized, it's not what the parents want to see. Why, you know, your rotating curriculum is brilliant as well, as part of it is that parent perception. But
and I think that you're right on, if it doesn't look like discipline, you can't say you teach discipline. And a lot of instructors try to pull that. We teach discipline, but the class looks like chaos. It may be fun for the students, but nobody really learns, and the parents really know, hey, this isn't where I want to be. Now, it still has to be fun, but you better have that look, like you said, the dragon, that martial art look.
Yeah, it's so important. And it's what people, as they've gravitated towards MMA, miss is that most of the successful schools, whether it's a Krav Maga, as you run a program with Krav Maga as well, or whether it's a true MMA class or Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or Muay Thai, still got to look like martial arts, and it's still got to have the structure where it looks disciplined and organized and feels that way.
Yeah, we teach it in the same way.
Yeah, exactly. What are some of the key points of structure in the classroom that you're looking at? How do you teach instructors to get that look and feel?
Well, it's kind of, you don't really teach the instructors, you teach the students. Because once the students know it, the instructor just has to allow them to do it. I mean, it's just, if you set up the habits in your school, the instructor doesn't have to really do anything except make sure it's followed. But one of them is, we have dots on the floor. And it seems simple, and everybody has them, but we have dots on the floor, and every student knows that's their dot. So, and we line up by height. instead of the highest rank in the first, so the instructor can look everybody in the eyes. So that's a uniform look, not like popping up and down like some kind of a merry-go-round, but it has a uniform look, shortest in the front, tallest in the back. That also allows the tallest people in the back to hold targets when we do line drills, and allows me to face somebody when we bar, when I face my partner, which line one and two face each other, three and four. So I developed this system so that it looked like martial arts. Then how we pick up the cards is very uniform. And then how we pick on our safety equipment, all of line one goes, followed by line two, line three, line four, line five. Everything looks like a military drill. Those are kind of the 10 steps. How we bow in every day, bow to the parents first, bow to the instructor, say the student oath, pick up the cards. Everything has a certain structure to it. How we stretch, the junior instructor step forward, everybody knows to warm up. So all those structure points are very, very important. People say, well, dots on the floor, that's stupid. To me, that's one of the most important things, because everybody's got to know where to stand. Otherwise, they can't even line up. Even, you know, the first thing in the military you learn is how to march. I think that's what people need. That's what I do in my school.
Yeah, so I had the privilege of, you know, Helen Chung, Jun Ri's niece, her daughter,
sure,
was just accepted to the Air Force Academy, and I accompanied Helen to watch her daughter, Sophie, and they had just gone through basic training, and they have a ceremony for accepting them in as a freshman. And
right,
very impressive, just what you're describing is you had all of the new cadets, about 1,100 of them, organized into squads, organized into whatever the different groups that they consider,
sure,
and a one-hour ceremony that they had probably practiced for, you know, for 30 hours to be presented as new freshmen. And I took my 10-year-old daughter and I was explaining to her, I said, look, see, the reason they do this is to develop discipline and develop the ability to follow a specific procedure and develop the confidence of the follow through. And it's been proven over and over and over again in martial arts and in the military. And, you know, unfortunately, many of our peers try to get rid of that, and they eliminate
the most important part.
Absolutely.
Like eliminate the most important part, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's amazing. I've seen people forever eliminate bowing, eliminate stuff that makes people feel comfortable.
Yeah, bowing, uniforms, all those different structure points. What do you mean by instructor points?
Instructor points are what the instructor does on the floor. I mean, they use what we call black belt a minute, which is a reinforcement of people training towards their black belt. And you've seen it before where constantly they'll be telling people to punch like a black belt, punch like you're already a black belt. So one of them is black belt a minute. That's one of the instructor points. One of them is they pick the method they teach to match the attribute they're teaching. I mean, I don't know if that makes sense.
Clarify that if you don't mind.
Well, I mean, like if I'm trying to teach power, there are certain things I do. I don't just pick a target to teach power or have them break boards to teach power. There are certain things, if I was teaching power in a round kick, I might concentrate on pivoting the foot, rotating the body hard. If I was teaching speed, I might teach the first 6 inches of the kick has to be extremely fast, or the last 6 inches has to be totally relaxed. So, I mean, they would pick a method of teaching that actually brought it out. So and they,
okay.
I just go through it. I mean, that's one of the things. First, black belt a minute is one of the major things. They follow the class planner. I have a class planner for every class that every instructor absolutely follows, and that's what we teach by. Every testing cycle, the class planner is into a new 8-week testing cycle. So every week they got a new class planner. Every week it goes against the last class planner. It builds on the last class planner. And they follow that. That's called follow the planner. They use black belt a minute. We use set point. Instead of everybody who's Jumbi and all that, we bring everybody back to set, which is an attention stance. Anytime we say set, they snap to. And we move on and off set point, kind of like military use on and off attention and at ease. But we just use set. And we say that, they snap to. Another instructor point is we never let them rest. I see a lot of schools where they have a lot of downtime. In other words, the students sit on the side and they watch the instructor spar somebody so the instructor can show off. We don't do that at all. We have zero downtime. The class is in motion the full time. We verbalize our expectations. That's as an instructor point. We tell them exactly what we expect. We don't really point out what we don't expect. Like if I want them to lock their back leg out in a front stance and keep their back leg straight, that's what I'll tell them to do. I will never say to a student, don't bend your back leg, because all they do is hear, bend your back leg, bend your back leg. And so we make sure that we verbalize our expectations. We cut instructor point. We use a lesson of the month. We use the simple concept of praise, correct praise. That was pretty good. If you rotate your hips, you'd be a little bit stronger. And then when they do it, we have to go back and say, that's exactly what I was looking for. A lot of people understand PCP, but they don't use it, and nobody ever follows them on it. Pace and peak. The class is really, really fast, a little bit slower, really, really fast. We don't try to keep the class. I don't have a high-energy class the whole class. I don't believe in that. I use my tone of voice to dictate. I'm either going for intensity or a slow-down motion, or I'm going really, really fast. I'll pick up the pace of my voice. So I kind of control the pace in the, of the class with my voice. That's an instructor point. I use corrective feedback. I already said that. I use the lesson of the month every single class, and it's written out on the class planner how to do it. And the lesson of the month is everybody else teaches life skills. I have a lesson of the month. There's nine of them that rotate throughout the year. And then I use awards and announcements. Those are the 10 instructor points. Awards and announcements at the end of every class. So every class, they're going to hit those. They're going to use set point a lot. They're going to follow the floor plan. If they get off the floor plan, I'm going to make a big note on their grade card that I'm watching. If there's any downtime, I'll make a negative check on their card. So I really watch these things for what the instructor's doing in the class.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you got all 10 of them. I'm going off the top of my head, but...
Well, we certainly got an awful lot of depth of content there in that, and we're going to have to make sure we transcribe this for everybody. But that was great.
Okay, and like I said, this has now become part of the. I started doing it like this years ago, and the ATAs, it worked so well, they've adapted it. We had one before, but it wasn't quite as detailed as what I started using because I was teaching college, and people would ask me for a syllabus, and I didn't know what the hell it was. And so when I had to teach at JU, Jacksonville University, that the guy that was giving me the job said, bring me your syllabus. You have one, don't you? And I said, yes, I know what it was. I went back and somebody helped me figure out what it was. And that's when I started writing how I'm going to teach, what I'm going to teach, wrote the curriculum down. Here's a class planner for the next semester. And he said, okay, great. He looked, this is as good as anything I've seen from a professor. And off I went. So we've used that a lot.
Excellent, excellent.
Every instructor that I stuck in there taught exactly like me because he had these 4 points and he had this last planner, which made it easy to follow.
Let me reinforce and ask you questions about a couple of these points.
Okay, sure.
When you talk about one of my personal pet peeves in instructor training is the no downtime thing. And
right. The
example you used, which I think is exactly right, but I'll see one of our instructors, and all of a sudden they're doing sparring with a class of 30, and there's 3 rings of 10 people each, and suddenly you've got 8 out of 10 people aren't doing anything. Or the example you used was the instructor sparring each student individually, and everybody else is watching, which means they're, you know, trying not to fall asleep while they're yawning on the side of the classroom.
Let me interfere here. If one of my instructors is teaching a seminar, not a class. At the end of a sparring seminar, they may spar every student to allow the student to attack them for fun, but it's not part of it. It's just at the very end. So I don't want you to think that we never, ever would have the student have the fun of a little kid sparring the instructor. I mean, but that only a seminar basis, not in the class.
Right. Kind of like what you're doing with Bill Wallace probably right now. He'll do a lot of that stuff too. But that's outside of the norm of a 45-minute or a one-hour class.
Now, on your sparring stuff, let me go back to your sparring example because that was very on target. In the sparring, there's always everybody sparring except one person in each ring is judging. And at the end of that time frame, that person steps in. And so somebody's doing something all the time. Nobody's watching. You're either judging calling points, learning to be a good judge, or you're sparring. But I do have groups, like you said, 10 groups, but in each group there's a judge and two people fighting. So
yes.
Just so you know, there is somebody that's not sparring, but he's judging. And there, I go about a minute and a half rounds, and everybody gets to spar every class.
Yeah, well, and that's okay. Different than what I see in so many classrooms do, is
right.
You're talking about breaking them up into groups of three people, and now you've got 10 groups of three people, and one of them is engaged in pointing out successes, and the other two are actually participating and they're rotating. The other thing I think is sometimes a misnomer is you talked about intensity versus high energy. And
right.
Over and over and over over the years, I've seen schools who will go watch a dynamic, charismatic instructor and then make the conclusion that keeping everybody moving fast with loud loud music going on in the background and everybody clapping is the route to good retention and high renewals. And what I've seen so many times is some of the schools with the best retention and the highest renewal rate and the highest graduation to black belt, it's about what you say, controlling the pace of the class, intensity, but it's not a 45-minute cheerleading session.
I don't believe in that.
Yeah. You know, portions of that have their place, but it's so much more about keeping everybody mentally engaged, focused on what they're doing, not letting them have that downtime so that they disengage emotionally and physically. So maybe you could expand on that a little bit. What do you think in the process? I think most of your classes, if I'm not mistaken, are 45 minutes or an hour, depending upon what level they're in. Is that correct?
Yeah. All my class planners are 45 minutes. It doesn't mean every class is. Because sometimes the Tiny Tigers only get through the first 30 minutes because their class is 30 minutes long, although my class planner is 45 minutes. Because we don't let them
right.
Do the full 45 minutes. So it's, in general speaking, the 45 minutes. I would say there are certain times that are extremely high energy. Let me turn here to my sheet. I was looking at what I was going to teach Monday. And on Monday we're doing, this is just, I'll run down the nine, there's nine steps in every class, okay? Why don't I just run down them? Warm-up, of course. I don't do high-energy warm-up. I do a very safe, moving fluid into the joint warm-up. I don't really try to burn my muscles up or anything like that. Then we do traditional basics. Again, there's no high energy there. Then we do the hand combinations, extremely high energy. It's the warrior combinations. We do those on focus mitts, or we do those on the bag. Then we go into the form segments, again, not high energy. Then we do self-defense, which is high energy, kicking drills, high energy, sparring, high energy, and then we come down to the conditioning, which is not necessarily high energy, and then we finish with awards and announcements. But about the last 20, 30 minutes is all pretty much high energy, trying to burn out their nerve, get rid of their energy, send them home tired and sweating. But in the beginning, there's a lot of alternate energy, lower energy, high energy, lower energy. So that's the nine steps of every class, of every class planner.
And I think nobody should miss the intermittentness, if that's the right word, of some of what you planned out. Starting off kind of slow, moving to a little higher energy,
right.
Moving back to something a little bit more precise, and then going to something that's getting more endorphins clicking off and a little bit more sweat going and pacing it back and forth.
Right.
So many times instructors miss that key element.
Well, I think there is a time maybe in summer camps or something where you can have a real high energy extreme class, but if you want people to learn, you got to run it at a pace that allows learning to take place, not just burning of excess energy.
Well, and it's human nature. If I'm as the instructor, if I'm shouting at the top of my lungs and talking really fast, I hear the pace and tone of your voice, but I don't hear the message. And
right,
a lot
right.
of times that slowing everybody down and talking softer and talking more slowly is what gets their attention and gets them even more mentally engaged rather than just physically moving fast.
Yeah, and I mean, of course, if you really want someone to listen, you whisper. So intensity
yeah.
is
yeah.
not loud yelling and screaming your voice out. I see instructors, they lose their voice every time they teach. Doesn't make sense to me. Either they don't know how to teach or they just work, they're burning their energy. Instead of the students having energy, the instructor tries to give them his energy, which doesn't make sense to me.
You bet. You bet. You know, we've hit so much content already that I hate to overwhelm everybody. I'm sitting here taking notes myself, and I think I'm on page 7. But if we might go back to just one more thing to wrap up, and I,
okay.
I certainly want to have a couple more conversations because there's just so much substance here. But let's go back to some of the rapport building. We talked about structure and a lot of points. We talked about instructor points, and touched upon rapport building, but. You know, I quote a statistic oftentimes that something like 75 or 85% of the reason that somebody quits any business, martial arts school or anything, isn't because of bad quality, but is because of perceived apathy.
I believe that you build rapport with somebody, you got them for life.
Exactly, exactly. And, of course, as an owner-operator, a lot of times we do that naturally or because of our own self-interest, but then duplicating that in staff is a more difficult thing. So training that on the juniors. You talked about several things earlier about making eye contact, touching their shoulder, touching their foot, touching their hand, shaking the parents' hands, having the parents read the lesson of the week, having the parents bow in and out. How do you really train an instructor to have a checklist to go through those?
I have a checklist. That's it. I develop a checklist. I don't know, 25, 30 years ago. And incidentally, this works. I'm not the only one. I mean, one of my highest-ranked juniors, Master Von Schmeling, has 25 schools, too. He'll pass me in the next year or two. I mean, so this is repeatable when you use the system. And he has great fighters and great instructors. And I have a lot of people. I mean, you came down, you probably, a lot of people think if you do business, you can't teach martial arts. But I think when you were here with Master Smith, you saw my good guys are really good. My average guys are pretty good. And I have a few poor ones, too, that are getting better. But I don't think I teach terrible martial arts by the fact that we try to make money also.
Oh, I've told so many people that it's the opposite. The most profitable operations I've seen, whether it's your schools that I've personally witnessed in Jacksonville, Master Von Schmeling schools that I've personally visited in Orlando, or other friends like Steve LaValle or operations like Tiger Shulman across the board, the schools that are the most robust financially are the ones that are creating the most robust students. There's always an exception to that rule. There's the ones who have come and gone quickly because of slick marketing sales techniques. But, you know, in your case, your schools have been in Jacksonville since for how long now?
1971.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
I opened my first school in 71. So I think it works.
Yeah, I just celebrated Mile High Karate's 28th year anniversary. But, you know, 71, you've got, 40 years. Yeah. And I'm sure you now have parents who are bringing their kids whose parents trained with you. I've had a few of those. Exactly. So you're getting the third generation and soon the fourth generation that have been training with you. It makes you and I feel old, but it's a testament to the level of quality and you know, Jacksonville is a fairly good sized city, but if you were teaching sloppy stuff, you would have been found out many years ago.
Right. Well, I'm sure that, you know, I have my fans and I have my people that are not fans, but my instructors are doing a good job regardless of that. And I make sure that they do, and we train on, like what you asked about was rapport building, though. And I just,
yes.
You said, how do I have a checklist? I just made one.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a checklist for how to build rapport with parents, how to build rapport with students, and there's 10 things on each list. When I watch somebody teach, every time they do one of them, I make a check on my paper. And if they don't have 25 checks on rapport building at the end of the class, I tell them their class. I don't just say, hey, you taught a crummy class. I say, here's what I like. Look up here under structure. You followed everything. Matter of fact, I have 50 checks on structure in this class, but I only have 2 on rapport building. This is the area we can work on. So it allows me to make my instructors better by simply having a checklist for all 4 areas.
Well, Chief Master Clark, this is, you know, we've got way more content and way more depth than anybody could have possibly hoped for here. And, you know, this is certainly one of those recordings that merits listening to 20 or 30 times, taking notes and reading the transcript. And I certainly hope to steal your time to go more in depth with several of these topics. And certainly anybody who gets an opportunity to train with you on instructor training or anything else, they should take it. But I know we've monopolized your time enough for today, and we're probably have given people so much content that they can't absorb anymore. It's kind of like one of my favorite Far Side cartoons with a kid with his hand up saying, "Professor, Professor, my brain is full." But this has been phenomenal. I appreciate it immensely, Chief Master Clark. So we better let you run and try not to pour more content into everybody's already saturated brain.
All right. Well, I look forward to seeing you soon, boss.
Thank you, sir.